Good afternoon, and welcome to USIP. I'm Dorina Biko, and we are here to talk today about Zimbabwe. We're all anxious about what's going to happen tomorrow at their elections. And we are grateful that Freedom House has approached us to co-sponsor this this public event. So I'll turn it over shortly, but just wanted to introduce Ozong Aborsangaya Pitu. She joined Freedom House and serves as a senior program manager. She's a specialist with 15 years of experience designing and implementing conflict management and peace building programs, primarily in conflict affected countries in sub-Saharan Africa. She is recently back from the field, and she'll say a few words about that and then introduce the rest of the panel. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thanks, Lorena, for that introduction. Freedom House is excited to co-host this event, Zimbabwe, with USIP. Freedom House has been monitoring and analyzing political trends in Zimbabwe for the last two decades. And in the last 2 years, we have been implementing a program to build the capacity of civil society organizations to mobilize for democratic reform. Previous elections in Zimbabwe, as you all know, have been disputed and have been marred by political violence. And the upcoming elections have generated much hope, suspense, uncertainty, and fear about the outcome of the elections. We are quite fortunate, privileged to have with us two extremely seasoned and excellent panelists, Tom Milia and Ray Shoto. Tom has traveled to more than a dozen countries on democracy promotion issues and was part of NDI's team advising the SADC Parliamentary Forum on how to do election monitoring in the 90s. He will be reporting on his trip to Zimbabwe. Tom and I went to Southern Africa 2 weeks ago. Tom managed to spend a weekend and I wasn't able to get in because my visa was rejected. Let's see, so Tom will be sharing some highlights of his trips and talking about some areas of concern and hope. Any more details about Tom's background will be in the CV that you have picked up. He's currently Freedom House's Deputy Executive Director. Ray Shoto is a Zimbabwean journalist. He's working as Senior Editor for Studio 7, which is at the Voice of America. It's a radio program that broadcasts daily for 90 minutes into Zimbabwe. He's had a long career as an investigative journalist at the Standard Independent Weekly, which is a weekly paper, and he made headlines in 1999 as he was arrested, detained, and tortured repeatedly for 3 days after he refused to disclose the information about his sources, and since then has been working for Voice of America. He's an acclaimed journalist, and we're happy to have Ray here as well. Ray will be speaking first and foremost as a Zimbabwean and then from a journalist perspective. With regard to the format, I think each of our panelists will be speaking for, we'll be making some comments for 12 minutes each, and then we will have a question and answer session. So I'm going to turn it over to Tom Milia, who's going to make the first set of comments. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Ozong, and thank you, Dorina, and all the others here at the U.S. Institute of Peace that have helped put together today's event. I'm also honored to be sitting next to Ray Shoto, a distinguished journalist and a hero in the struggle for freedom in his own country and more broadly in Africa. So I'm honored to be here. I don't get to Zimbabwe very often. The last time I was in Zimbabwe, the week before last, was in December of 1980. Every 28 years or so I go. So even though I've been around the region from time to time in the intervening years, I hadn't actually been into Zimbabwe in a very long time. And I was struck by how many things had changed. In fact, almost everything has changed except for the name of the guy running the country. That's the center of the story, I guess, this week, is the election that will take place on Saturday, when the people of Zimbabwe may have a chance to decide if he should stay in office as president of Zimbabwe. Now, there are many people in this room who know much more about Zimbabwe and have been there even more frequently than I have been. And so I don't want to presume to lecture to you about Zimbabwe. What I will do is provide a few observations from our recent trip and then kind of set the table for a larger discussion in which I hope more people will participate. We just spent 4.5 days or so in Zimbabwe the week before last, and so what I offer you is my impressions in election season, 2 weeks before Election Day. I guess overall I would describe the attitude of the many civil society people, for that's mostly who we met with, as one of nervous hopefulness. There was something in the air that these elections might amount to something or might lead to something that was a little bit surprising, frankly. And I, when I started planning the trip a few weeks earlier, I had thought that part of our role as Freedom House would be to encourage the people who have been working on Get Out the Vote campaigns and voter education campaigns in the program that we've been supporting to tell them not to give up hope. As bad as this election was going to be, there might be another chance down the road when the people of Zimbabwe might actually be able to choose their leaders in a fair and transparent process. But by the time I got there, a couple of major things had changed. The most important of which is the entry into the race of Simba Mokoni, the former finance minister and longtime SADC secretary general. And that had created a huge change in people's attitudes. The fact that some, not a lot, but some other members of ZANU-PF and the establishment had come out in support of Makoni's candidacy for president, and the fact that he had described himself as a ZANU-PF person. He was not running against the party, he was running as an alternative candidate to president, positioned him in a way that potentially makes him attractive as a candidate for a lot of people who historically have voted for ZANU-PF, who long ago perhaps were supporters of Robert Mugabe, but now are looking for another choice, but who don't yet think that the main opposition, the MDC, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, represents a choice that they want to make. And so Makoni's emergence has really changed the dynamic quite significantly and gave a kind of hope to those who are looking for change in Zimbabwe. The story of Zimbabwe's decline politically and economically over these last 28 years is well known. I don't need to recite it for you. I'll just give you three measures of the state of the economic devastation of the last few years. Firstly, that somewhere between a fifth and a quarter of the population lives outside the country, mostly in South Africa. A couple of million people have gone across the border to find jobs, to find work. Many of them, most of them, in fact, probably, I think, are illegally in South Africa. So there's a huge Zimbabwean diaspora in South Africa, and that's a measure of the state of the country. The second is the way that petroleum is bought and sold. As the economy has declined and the currency has lost its value, the oil importing companies sell coupons in hard currency that you then take to a petrol station to fill your tank with gas, so that they get their hard currency up front, they then bring the gasoline into the country, put it into the stations, and it can be purchased with this in this coupon system. That's the major exception to the formal economy that is legal in Zimbabwe, in which people are obliged to use this currency. This is the third measure of the devastation of the economy. Since January, they've been printing these banknotes that say they're worth 10 million Zimbabwean dollars. This is the largest denomination. 2 weeks ago, it was worth 30 cents US. Now, 10 days later, it's probably worth 27 cents. And it's interesting, I've never seen a banknote like this before. It says it was issued on January 1st, 2008, and it expires on the 30th of June, 2008. Never seen currency that says it's going to expire. And that's probably an accurate promise as well. That by December, or by June 30th, it will be worth about zero. It shouldn't be worth than a penny at the rate the rates are changing these days. So the $10 million note worth 30 cents and declining and will expire by the end of June, that's as clear a measure of the state of the economy as I think I've ever seen in any country in the world. There are many other signs of the political and economic decline of Zimbabwe under its current leadership. And yet, I would say one of the things I was struck by was that Harare is at the same time a rather bustling city. people coming and going. There's quite a rush hour in the morning and late afternoon. People coming and going from work, buses and trucks are full of people coming and going, lots walking to get downtown to go to work. It's a kind of a ghost-like city atmosphere in that they're going to places where they're working for this money that's not worth anything. And so it demonstrates both that the Zimbabwean people are energetic, hardworking, ready to do a day's work for hopefully for money that might mean something someday, and that they're ready to rebuild their country. And you see that even in the like all the high density neighborhoods on the outskirts of the city, where I spent a little bit of time and saw much more acutely the economic devastation of whole towns and neighborhoods without running water and sewage. This long into Zimbabwe's independence, things should have been a lot better for the majority population of Zimbabwe, and clearly it is not the case. So there's this odd juxtaposition of devastation and energy at the same time, and that was underscored by the conversations I had with so many of the civil society leaders with whom we were working. I was there to check in on a rather large civil society program that we've been running with support from USAID, the Australian Aid Agency, and the British government have all contributed to work that we've been doing with 4 dozen or so different civic organizations over the last couple of years, leading up to this election season, in which they would, and they have been, and many of you that came in earlier saw some slides running on the screen over here of different posters and some radio and television spots that have been produced by one or another of the groups in this coalition. There's been a lot of effort to get people mobilized to participate in this election, notwithstanding the many flaws in the system that I won't relate all of. It had been an uphill struggle for a long time because the Zimbabwean people have mostly given up on elections as a means to effect political change because the last several electoral events have been so flawed and so rigged against the voters. And yet there was this new energy, and I think people that had been planning to go do get out the vote stuff were really energized. And there was a lot of activity going on in these scores of organizations. That's the premise of that program. Maybe put it in a little bit of context. The reason that we thought it was worthwhile to encourage people to vote, notwithstanding the many flaws in the system that stacked the deck against a fair outcome in most cases, was that low voter turnout contributes to election fraud. It makes it much easier to stuff the ballot box and fiddle the numbers if a lot of people don't bother to go vote. If at the end of voting day in any place, electoral officials are left with a lot of unused ballots and an empty box and a lot of people who didn't show up to vote, it's the easiest thing in the world to start marking the ballots and putting them in the box and otherwise inflating the count and skewing the outcome. One of the ways to counter election fraud is to have a lot of people come out and vote like it matters. Because if they do come out and vote like it matters, then it will matter more. Because then people will be participating and they'll feel like they own the election process. And they will reduce the room for maneuver for the process to be fiddled with. That's why we did it. Not just because we think it's good that people should vote even in a phony process, but we think that by voting they could make it more of a genuine process. And as events in Pakistan remind us recently, it is possible in a structurally imperfect and severely flawed election for the voice of the people to be heard nonetheless, to overwhelm the efforts to control the outcome. And so we thought that if, and our Zimbabwean partners thought this and persuaded us, and we arrived at this together, that if we could get a lot of people to go out and vote, it might become a more genuine process. And so that's what we've been under in the course of doing, in supporting the efforts of these several dozen different NGOs to mobilize people in different ways, to get registered in the earlier period and now to come out and vote like it matters on Saturday, and then to try to conduct an independent observation of the vote so that if there are specific problems that they'll be exposed and hopefully corrected. So we'll run the slides again when we finish our discussion and show you the different kinds of messages that are being sent by different groups that range from the Christian Alliance, which is a group of evangelical Christian pastors in various parts of the country, to agricultural and trade union workers organizations, to women's groups and youth groups and for including Women of Zimbabwe Arise, WOZA, well-known women's activist group. So there's a lot of groups participating in this and trying to get people to act like the election matters in the hopes that by doing so, it will matter. A couple notes about the campaign that I saw underway while I was there. It's kind of interesting. I don't have these posters. I wish I did. The main presidential candidates in Simba Mokoni and Morgan Tsvangirai have what you would think of as kind of normal presidential campaign posters and slogans. Kind of happy, smiling, sunny, upbeat, sort of, well, the country will be better under new management going forward. They contrast distinctly with the artwork, the posters and the slogans of Robert Mugabe's presidential campaign. The pictures are of him with an angry face, shouting, scowling, and with his fist raised. Not just the traditional revolutionary ZANU-PF fist, but an angry fist, like he's pounding something. And the slogan is, Fist of Fury. On his campaign posters. And then some of them say, The Man Behind the Fist. Now these are the ZANU-PF posters. And I don't know what kind of campaign advice he's getting from which consultants. But the idea that you really want to frighten the voters into voting for you so explicitly is a novel campaign tactic. I had not seen that in any of the other many countries that I've traveled in around election times. So it's kind of eye-catching. Now, the also another bit about the campaign is that the MDC folks... we did not actually meet with Simba Mokoni's campaign because he's made it a point to stay away from foreigners and Westerners especially, so he doesn't get tagged as Morgan Tsvangirai and the MDC have been tagged as, you know, tools of foreign intervention and British imperialism and the like. So Mokoni's been staying away from us foreigners, and it's probably tactically sound for him to do that. So we didn't see him, but we did see some MDC folks, and they reported that they were actually out campaigning and getting away with it, as they put it, and campaigning increasingly in what were traditionally ZANU-PF areas and without much harassment. And they took a lot of heart in that, and this is part of the nervous hopefulness that each day that I was there, people would say in different ways, and many different people did say this, was, well, today is another day that there has not been the anticipated upsurge in violence from the government that we had anticipated. And so each day went by, it was like, well, we can actually do this. We can get out and campaign, have a meeting, have a rally, get around the country. And the civil society people in the separate activities that they're engaged in, trying to get materials and information and mobilizing their volunteers to get around the country, each day that went by in that week, they were more sort of hopeful that they could get away with it, of actually getting their people to participate in a meaningful election. So there was this kind of growing atmosphere of hopefulness that week, and it was directly tied, in the words of many people, to the fact that they were not seeing the violence that they thought they would see from security forces and others associated with the government. In the days since we left, some of that has changed a little bit. There have been a number of steps, announcements made by the president and the government that have made people more anxious. And so this week, the word from our colleagues in Zimbabwe is that there's a rising anxiety level as the election day draws closer that is competing with this hopefulness. And that comes directly from the threats and the statements made by the government and some specific actions that have been taken. For instance, and there's a lot of issues in electoral administration that we could go into, but one or two that come to mind are the, at year's end, when the SADC mediated arrangements for these elections were agreed upon, one of the things that was agreed was that police officers would be located 100 meters from polling stations. And last week it was announced that, well, in fact, the president had said that they would actually be inside the polling stations to help voters vote. That's not a good sign. The second was, this map, in fact. This map, this shows a constituency, one of the 210 parliamentary constituencies in the country. And the red lines are roads, I think, and then there are some faint lines in this representation, the sort of gray lines that you may be able to see that crisscross the map, that divide the parliamentary constituency into, in this case, about 20 wards. subunits within the constituency. And these are new. The parliamentary constituency boundaries are new, and then the ward boundaries are new since the last elections. And the rule is that voters can go to any of several voting stations in their ward, but not elsewhere in the parliamentary constituency. And so people, these are of course even more invisible in the real world than they are on this map. And people don't necessarily know which ward they're in, and therefore which of the polling stations they should go to. And there's been no official public voter education to explain to people where the ward boundaries are. ZESIN, the Domestic Election Monitoring Network, and some others have just in the last 10 days begun to sort of circulate these maps to different places so that people can begin to look at where their residence is located and therefore where they are in which ward. So this is kind of new information in the last 10 days for many people, and most people in the country don't have this information. And so it will likely lead to people going to wherever they voted in previous elections, which may not be in the right ward anymore. So these kinds of steps were taken, some think, you know, deliberately to confuse voters and make it more difficult for a large number of people to come out and vote. And so there are, you know, a number of things like this that have been, that voter education efforts have been trying to overcome the otherwise natural effect of some of these rules changes, which is that it will discourage people and make it more easy for people to vote in the wrong place or get turned away from the voting station after spending hours waiting in lines and so on. So, and interestingly, this again is unusual in my experience in various countries in the world, the Election Commission has said that people couldn't do voter education unless they approved it. And then they declined to let ZESIN and some others do voter education. So that some radio ads and TV adverts that were prepared and to be broadcast on public airwaves were rejected on grounds that you know, they were not properly authorized to be doing voter education. So rather than use the materials that was prepared, the Election Commission decided it would be better to have no voter education than voter education that was done by somebody else. And so that's essentially what's happened up to this point. Two more points. One is that you know that international observers have mainly been barred from Zimbabwe in this election process, along with most reputable journalists. BBC, most famously, has been banned from Zimbabwe, and most of the well-known international election monitoring organizations and countries that normally send them have been kept away. Just a couple of weeks ago, the foreign minister announced that delegations from friendly nations would be welcome, including China, Iran, Russia, etc., and that delegations from the United States and Western Europe would not be allowed, and the African Union and the Southern African Development Community would be invited. Although, interestingly, SADC, which is that now there in some numbers, with an election observer delegation, was not allowed to bring their parliamentary forum, which is the part of the SADC infrastructure that is actually better trained and more prepared to do election monitoring. They were kept away, but SADC Secretariat was allowed to bring a delegation, which arrived while we were there, began arriving then. But many Zimbabweans don't have much faith in the SADC observers because it's widely reported that the Secretary General of SADC had already announced that the elections would be free and fair, and therefore they were there to certify that. That builds on the widespread dissatisfaction with SADC over the mediation process of late 2007. And I think SADC's reputation in Zimbabwe certainly is in danger. If they are able to come up with an honest and comprehensive report about this election process after it concludes, they could strengthen their image in the eyes of Zimbabweans. But right now, little is expected from SADC in this regard. Last thing is today's news from the front lines is the Harare is abuzz with a story about a supposedly imminent joint press conference between Simba Mokoni and Morgan Tsvangirai, which probably tomorrow they would appear together to describe their view of the election process. This is important because they haven't met, to anybody's knowledge, in this period since Mokoni announced his candidacy. Although many people did say that they think there's some rapport between the two men, notwithstanding their different political affiliations in recent years. and it goes back some years, and they have some personal rapport. So whether they are able to make some kind of common cause in these next 2 days or thereafter is a very interesting big question. Also, our colleagues report rumors of soldiers on the move and growing anxieties about the security forces potentially intervening more conspicuously on Election Day. And meanwhile, civil society leaders were strategizing earlier today and later tonight about what they might do on the day after the elections if they think the election results are not honestly reported. So it's a fast-changing, evolving situation today, 48 hours before Election Day. And I'd be interested to know what you all think about that. That's about all I have to report.
Thank you. We'll now move to hear from Mr. Choto.
Okay, thank you, and thank you, Ozan, for inviting me and Freedom House and everybody for coming in. Sean has covered quite a lot of ground as far as the situation is concerned in Zimbabwe. He has been there recently. My last time in Zimbabwe was in 2003. But I would say I'm in Zimbabwe on a daily basis because of the nature of my work, because we talk to people on a daily basis. The 2008 harmonized elections are going to be very exciting. But, you know, the results could upset so many people. I'll touch a number of issues, I mean, that we are observing from our coverage. If you look at the situation in Zimbabwe, inflation, as you were talking about, currents of 10 million, the inflation is 150,000 and more. And you've got a country which is full of poor billionaires. You pick a stone and throw it in the streets of Harare, you eat a billionaire, but a poor billionaire. The human crisis is beyond comprehension. People cannot afford to buy food. There is no farming activity that is taking place after the government has taken over most of the farms. And the government is full, the cabinet is full of cell phone farmers. They don't really go to the farms. They direct activities using their cell phones for people to work on their farms. They were given money by the Agribank to do farming, but most of these cabinet ministers and those who got land never paid back the loans to the Agribank. Life expectancy has gone to 37 years for men and 34 years for women. The service delivery system has collapsed. I mean, people do not have, access to basic needs in terms of sewage, reticulation, health services, the delivery, it has actually gone down. There is no investor confidence in Zimbabwe because of the policies. It came up with laws which forces local companies, or international companies, to cede almost like 51% to Zimbabweans. But who exactly would get those 51%? That has to come through the government, and only Mugabe and his cronies would have access to those shares. Unemployment is at 90%. Most industries have closed, and most of them have relocated to South Africa, meaning that people do not have jobs. So you have many people who are not employed. The Zambia party has been relying heavily on the rural vote, but from what you are getting on the ground, there has been a shift. You follow opposition. We send our reporters into rural areas. They see thousands and thousands of people attending opposition rallies. That never used to happen in Zimbabwe. The rural area was a no-go area for the opposition. But we are seeing a rebellious mood coming from the rural vote, and also that the climate of fear is dissolving. But come election day on Saturday, we're not quite sure whether the thousands and thousands of people who are going to attend opposition rallies are going to vote for the opposition. If they are going to vote for the opposition, that would mean, Mugabe's chances of winning this election are very slim. But there are fears that Mugabe might win the election through technical fraud. There are ghost polling stations that have been set up. Just 2 days ago, we discovered in Harare North that there is a constituency where 8,000 people have been registered in that constituency, but who do not stay there. They are using stands, like this plot number 22. So-and-so stays there. And a polling station has already been established in that place where there are no people who are staying there. So there are fears that Mugabe might use that to rig the election. And also, members of the opposition, they are quite disturbed with Mugabe's use of presidential powers. He has been changing electoral laws. He's being the player, the referee, and the judge at the same time. So people are not happy, especially with instrument number 46 of 2008, where Mugabe used his presidential powers to change certain laws, like what Tom was talking about, not allowing police to be within 100 meters from the polling station. But he had to use his presidential powers to ensure that the policemen would have to be in those polling stations helping people to vote. But the truth of the matter in Zimbabwe is that if you look at the police force, it's full of people who are very partisan, people, most of them, who are war veterans, people who participated in the war, and they still, you know, support Mugabe, although some today no longer support him. That's the problem, that we have a partisan police force. He has also been militarizing key institutions to make sure that the election is skewed to his favor. You look at Zach, you were talking about the chairman of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is a judge, but is a military guy. George Chuesh is in charge of that. You look at the police force itself, the commissioner general is Augustine Chiguri, who is an ex-combatant. He's directing all the operations. The prison service is run by an ex-combatant, who is Paradise Mondi, who has also been issuing statements threatening people if they vote for the opposition, and even came out openly to say that they are not going to salute Mugabe or Simba Makoni if Mugabe loses. That was faced with Zimondi, then Chiguri came, who is the Commissioner of Police, then Chiwenga, the guy from the Defense Forces. But nobody has condemned them. Even Sada, when they were asked, the statement that they issued was that they are not worried about those statements coming from members of the military or of the police force. They could have been worried if those statements were coming from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. But what do these words mean to the ordinary person in the street? It's like they are saying that if Simbama Kone or Tsvangirai wins, they are going to stage a coup, because they are not going to accept them as duly elected. So that's a situation which is worrying so many people. But people would want to know, why is Zimbabwe facing this crisis? I mean, from the reports that we are getting and the stories that we get on the ground, we hear stories of people after attaining independence, people sacrificed their lives. They were out in the bush fighting for the independence of their country. But there was no program that was put in place to prepare these people to have civilian life. Most of these government ministers and these top brass in the police force, they are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. They were never accepted back in the community and treated so that they behave in a normal way. No wonder why they're coming up with all these laws, which are unjust, and civil society and other democracy movements in Zimbabwe, they are saying that maybe it's time for Zimbabweans to embark on civil disobedience. Because some of the laws that are being enacted right now in Zimbabwe, they are simply put in place to ensure that the government of President Robert Mugabe remains in power and disadvantages the opposition. You talk about the coming of Simba Makoni just a few days before elections. There's quite a lot of excitement, and he's been talking about the big wigs coming to join him, but surprisingly there's only one big wig that has come out openly, who is Dumiso Dabengwa. And people are asking, who are the big wigs? And we're told today that he was going to have another press conference in Bulawayo, where he's going to announce probably the retired army general, Solomon Mujuru, could be announcing his affiliation or his support for Makoni. But that's most unlikely to happen, because Mugabe has made sure that, he has asked all the top brass in the military, he has asked all his ministers to come openly and say, I am supporting Mugabe during this election, I'm not supporting Simba Makoni. But then, where does that leave the Zimbabwean? Because people will say, okay, fine, the opposition might have failed to come up very strong and, you know, take the reins of power from Mugabe. It would be very unfair to say that the opposition, you know, has failed, because if you look at the laws that have been put in place in Zimbabwe, it's quite difficult for the opposition really to campaign. There have been some kind of change as a result of the SADC, mediation process headed by Thabo Mbeki, there have been some grounds that have been gained where, you know, people have not been ill-treated as they used to do. I mean, there's been a criminal offense for people to group four people. I mean, that would be regarded as an illegal gathering. Imagine you cannot even have a meeting at a hotel, which has not been been sanctioned by the police. You need to inform them that you're having a meeting. So it has been very difficult for the opposition to really organize themselves into a strong force because Mugabe has been using the machinery at his disposal. When we talk about rigging, the rigging I don't think is really done by, stashing ballot box and things like that. I think Mugabe, the way he has been handling the laws in the country, this election is a process, right? And the Saturday is an event. People go to vote, but so many things have taken place which are going to affect the result of this election. We are talking about Mugabe using the presidential powers to change certain laws, which is also an assault on the SADC mediation process, because it was agreed that you cannot have the presence of the police force in these polling stations because they somehow intimidate ordinary Zimbabweans, because Zimbabweans are used to be beaten up by police. If you see a policeman or a soldier, the next thing that you think about is fear that I may be beaten. Here's a situation where you are being asked, especially those who cannot write properly, those who cannot see, to be held by a policeman. Already you're scaring them. So people think that Mugabe is trying to use that to instill fear in the minds of the people so that they vote for the ruling party. Coming again on Simba Makoni, some people are not really happy with the coming of also of Simba Makoni, because it's most likely going to split the opposition board. Because here now you have two opposition forces fighting against Mugabe. So you have the Tsvangirai MDC movement, and you have Simba Makoni with his new friends, the MDC Mtambara faction, who have joined hands. So you've got two opposition political parties fighting against Mugabe, which is most likely going to split the vote, and people are talking of a possible runoff. But we have to wait and see. The information that we are getting on the ground is that the Tsvangirai seems to be much ahead. The Tsvangirai, MDC Tsvangirai, seems to be much ahead in terms of support in the rural areas and in the urban areas as well. Today he was in Chitungiza, where he had over 15,000 people. He was in Mutare, where he had more than 15,000 people. When Mugabe went there, he had 5,000 people. When Simba Makoni went to Chitungiza, he had 2,000 people. He went to Marondera, he had over 10,000 people who gathered at his rally. When Simba Makoni in Mtambara went there, they had about 2,000 to 3,000 people. So, if you look at the statistics that we are getting, indications are that the opposition led by Morgan Tsvangirai is most likely to win, but whether it's going to have the 50% plus one vote to become a government is going to be a problem. Therefore, there could be a run-up. That's probably what Tim Tom was talking about. The MDC and the Simba Makoni will have to sit down and strategize what to do in the event of the run-off. But we're also dealing with people here who are all both power-hungry. Simba Makoni has got a problem too, because when he stood up, he wanted to be the president. He approached Tsvangirai for the opposition, say, okay, I want to get into politics. I know how to destroy ZANU-PF, but I have to be the leader. But how can Tsvangirai lead the opposition? He has been with the MDC since 1999, and he's being asked, to play second fiddle to Simba Makoni, because right now his popularity is still being questionable. Tsvangirai has been tried and tested, so we may be seeing some kind of tension between the two. Just like what's happening in Kenya, when you look at it, there was an agreement between the opposition, but the actual implementation of that accord seems to be a problem right now. So people are seeing Simba Makoni is probably one of the Judas Iscariot of the Zanu-PF of politics, or the Kenyan Kalonzos. People are going to spoil the fort. So quite exciting, but at the same time, again, the result is it may also upset people, as I have said, because there is so much hope that since the raw voice is now speaking, and therefore they are going to disown Mugabe. But what exactly is going to happen on March 29th? Nobody really knows until the elections have been counted. They have been told that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is planning to have all presidential votes or ballots taken to Harare, the command center, where they'll be read. And obviously voiced against that, but the ZEC is saying, oh no, we are not going to do that. What we are going to do is we are going to count all the votes at the polling stations. It's only the numbers that will be, I mean, read at the command center for the presidential election. But for the parliamentary elections, the results will be announced in the constituencies, but the presidential vote, they say, no, it has to be announced in Harare. That's a little bit worrisome as far as Zimbabweans who are going to vote are concerned. The other problem that we are also getting from the people who are reporting for us is that the opposition, Simba himself in Tsvangirai, they're always complaining that, I mean, Mugabe, every time he's talking at a rally, he's bashing Simba Makoni, he's bashing Mugabe, he's bashing America, he's bashing Britain for imposing sanctions against the country. In reality, if you look at it, the two major countries that are helping Zimbabwe with humanitarian aid, the United States and Britain, and these are the countries that are being bashed on a daily basis by Mugabe. But one will have to wait and see whether the kitchen sink politics will work for Mugabe this time, because it's always been bashing all these people, the opposition, Britain and everybody, and people seem to be buying his analysis. But now people are going to vote on an empty belly. People cannot afford to send their children to school. People who used to go to their raw homes on a monthly basis can't afford. And people cannot even afford to have enough money for transport to go to work, because the cost for transport is more than the wages that they are getting by the end of the day. So people are getting into this election with this background of economic hardship, the deterioration of the economy, the delivery system, which is non-operational, investor confidence, which has been destroyed. Zimbabwe used to be one of the countries that used to feed the region, but today it is a begging bowl. I remember at independence, our Zimbabwean dollar was almost close to the US dollar. But right now, it's fetching almost like $60 million US. That I was talking about, I mean, $60 million Zimbabwean dollars, $1 US. So that's what I was talking about. I mean, you are having a country that is full of poor billionaires. So they are getting into this election with this background, and we do not really know how they are going to vote, because maybe people are going to these rallies out of fear or out of excitement. Did they register to vote? Is another question. Because there were some complaints that people could not have access to the registration processes because they did not have enough particulars. So you may have big numbers, but at the same time, again, talking about people who are not going to vote, and how is that going to impact on the election is something that we'll have to talk about when we get there. But the election is quite exciting, but as I've said, it might upset quite a lot of people at the end of the day. I think I'll wait for, questions and answers.
Thank you very much. We've heard two, I think, very rich presentations from the ground, and what I want to do now is just open it up to you. Also, if you could please turn off your cell phones, it tends to interfere with our microphones. And also, if you could identify yourself. So, floor's open. Yes. Oh, sorry, there's a mic on the side.
I'm a World Bank consultant. I'm wondering what the panelists think the prospects for post-election violence are, and is the international community prepared for that prospect? If so, how?
I think there is a prospect of post-election violence, and it's almost entirely in the hands of the government of Zimbabwe to decide whether there will be violence or not. Starting with the violence of potentially manipulating the results of the elections, which I think would lead to some kind of citizen action of some sort. People will come out and protest probably peacefully, and then the government will be left with a choice about whether to respond with force. So I think there is a possibility of violence. I think it's almost entirely in the hands of the government whether there will be that violence or not, both on election day and in the days afterward. What the international community is prepared to do about that, I don't know. I know that a number of governments have lined up to denounce the anticipated stealing of the elections, but I don't know that they actually have operational plans to provide additional humanitarian assistance or medical services or anything like that. Sanctions are already in place against key members of the regime. There is talk about ratcheting those up, but again, I don't know that that's a direct antidote to violence.
I would agree with Tom that, I mean, there's likely to be some violence. Because, I mean, when I'm talking about all these ghost polling stations, you know, I mean, they are put in place to ensure that, I mean, Mugabe rigs the election. So people are not going to be happy in the event that he is declared the winner. Because, I mean, if you look, as I was saying, that if you look at what's on the ground, the mood on the ground, you know, people, I mean, are really in a position to reject him. But with regards to the international community, I don't think there's any preparedness to deal with the crisis in Zimbabwe, because I haven't heard anything apart from statements being made that they would condemn, is what he's saying. But anything that has been put in place to deal with that, apart from condemning, I don't think there's anything. So we, not really that we may end up having a Kenyan situation, but the talk is like that in the country, that, you know, let's try to avoid what happened in Kenya, let's try to avoid what happened in Kenya. But I mean, people are saying, no, the Kenyan issue is, it's quite different from the Zimbabwean one. But others have said, let's not rule out, you know, there could be some violence. And I mean, people are angry sometimes, you know, but reasoning is not, I mean, on their side. So we may be having those problems. But in the event that the opposition wins, and again, Mugabe does not accept, because that's what he's saying, he's not going to accept this guy is winning, Makoni and Tambara. What does that mean? Is he going to stage a coup, or what is he going to do? So that alone, I mean, it's facilitating room for violence, because if somebody has won, why wouldn't you accept? Because if we are going in an election, you have to accept the result of that election. You cannot go into an election and say, oh, fine, I mean, I lost it, but I'm not going to accept it. I mean, he should be exemplary, and Mugabe should respect the wishes of the people. I do not see much violence coming from the opposition, but I think that the violence would come from the other side. I mean, the opposition has not been violent. Of course, they've been attacked and they've retaliated. But I mean, Mugabe has made it quite clear. He said he's got degrees of violence, and he has never even condemned, even when members of the opposition were beaten in police custody by the police. But he never condoned that. So, I mean, it's all up to Mugabe how he has to address these issues. But he needs to respect the wishes of the people and accept the outcome. We have heard that some of the intelligence people, they have informed him to accept the result. But he's a stubborn guy. We'll have to wait whether he's going to accept, in the event that the opposition wins. But people right now are talking of a possible lead, Tsvangirai leading the election, probably with Simba Makoni coming second and Mugabe third. That's what's coming on the ground, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yes, Deirdre.
I'm Deirdre Le Pen, I'm consultant at USIP. I have a couple of questions if I can ask too. One is, what was motivating Makoni to enter the race? What has he said, and what does he expect? And secondly, do you see much psychological impact of the recent response to the election in Kenya? Might that change the reaction to the election in this case?
You know, actually, let me take a couple, sir, and you.
Thank you. Roman Scott from the National Democratic Institute. Thank you for the wonderful presentation. I wanted to ask two very brief questions. And you may have touched upon the second and third project. What are the prospects for a second round? How realistic do you think the second round is in terms of President Mugabe possibly allowing it to go into the second round, or what if he doesn't convert the vote? Does he want to close the deal so that he can round? Secondly, what are the prospects if violence does come of government of national unity emerging? I read reports that Makoni and others have voiced that as a possibility, trying to rally some of the dissidents that are currently backing Mugabe and peace in public into an arrangement of a government of national unity. How do you assess that? Thank you.
Take one more, sir.
Batman and Terry Holland with the Department of State. I was curious, in your meetings with opposition or civil society organizations, have you heard anyone discuss strategies for independent vote tabulation? Setting up media channels independent of official state message, and how they plan on doing that and getting that message out to the international community.
Would you like to go first, or?
You have been in Zimbabwe recently, so I'll give you the lead.
Well, on maybe in reverse order, on the parallel vote tabulation and independent flows of information, there was one news item today or yesterday that partly answers that, which was that two media-related NGOs in Zimbabwe have been accused by the government of being recruited by the U.S. to secretly observe Saturday's elections without the approval of ZEC. I mean, this is the posture of the government, which is that people don't have a right to just like walk the streets and comment on what they see. You need to get special permission. And so they've excluded journalists. They've made it very difficult for Zimbabwean journalists to do their work, and generally for this independent flow of information to take place. The ZESA network, the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, which brings together a number of NGOs and which NDI has been supporting for a number of years, in various ways about how to do election monitoring in parallel vote tabulations. They're going to do a version of that. The degree to which they'll be able to pull it off on Saturday, I think, is an open question. But is their intention to have people present in all of the polling stations to collect the information about what the count is at that polling station? And that's the basis for a parallel tabulation of the votes, so that one could then compare it to what's officially announced at a constituency level or a national level. I think they're calling it something else, statistical monitoring and monitoring, statistics-based monitoring, sample-based monitoring, rather than a parallel vote tabulation. But so some effort in that direction is being made. How well it'll come together, I think, is an open question. But it's the difficulty is occasioned by the government's hostility towards the free flow of information. So that's part of what is complicating the work of ZESIN to do that work. Let's see. On the other, the prospects for a second round, I think, are completely depend on whether Robert Mugabe is willing to respect the count, whether there will be an honest count, and whether he'll let the honestly counted votes be announced. If there is a second round, which means that more than half the people in the country have voted for someone other than Mugabe, then I think in a second round even fewer people will vote for Mugabe. The fist of fury is less threatening once it's been demonstrated that more than half the people in the country are willing to vote against him. And so I think he understands that if he acknowledges that he gets only a plurality or somebody else gets a plurality and it goes to a runoff, there's the rub. See, I don't think there's a possibility that he could win a runoff in an open, honest process. So most observers there, diplomats and civil society people, think that he either acknowledges that he's lost the first round and moves on, or he will announce that he's won the first round regardless of the way the votes are cast. That's the big $64,000 question. I think most people presume that given given the fundamental economic situation of the country, that it is not logical that people would vote to keep the current team in power. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at any level. Except if he was able to mobilize, you know, through his populist rhetoric in a way that was persuasive to people, to get them genuinely to want to support him in the face of what he describes as foreign intervention and efforts to destabilize the country that are beyond his control. If that's a persuasive argument, and he could make that and mobilize people to vote for him in large numbers, that's a theoretical possibility. It's just that I don't think people buy it anymore. And that's the significance of the Makonnen candidacy. Simi Makonnen has come out because I think, like others in ZANU-PF, they figured that it can't go on any longer. They need a change. And there had been a discussion over many months last year about some kind of succession scenario within ZANU-PF, that they would put forward a more modern, younger, more coherent approach to governing. And Mugabe shut that down. And so what you have now in Makonnen's candidacy is a primary election being fought out in the general election. He is one of the people who might have, you know, been in line to succeed Mugabe in some sort of structured internal deliberation in the party. But Mugabe shut that down. And so, you know, what is Makonnen's motivation? He wants to be president. He wants to be the man in charge. And so he figured that this is his chance. He sees there's enough weakness in the regime that maybe they won't be able to do what Mugabe would want them to do. You know, people won't be loyal to the leader when he asks them to seize the ballot boxes or announce a, you know, conspicuously fraudulent result. That's the big question. Whether Mugabe will give the order, seize the ballot boxes, or announce a phony result, that's probably more likely. The real question is whether people will obey his orders and what numbers. You know, the fracture in the regime that is now apparent in Makoni's candidacy and in other smaller events, how deep those fissures go and how significant they are, and whether people will in the end be unafraid and will step up and support Makoni or otherwise say we should let the votes be counted. That's the unknown.
Are you talking about the general population, or are you talking about the party?
I'm talking about people who, A, who have generally supported ZANU-PF up to this point, and then their leaders in the community, and the government. You know, it's a wholly politicized government structure, so everybody who's got a public position is a ZANU-PF partisan. The question is whether they
so think the party may vote against them.
Or some significant part of it. Or the security forces. The party, you know, the people who run elections at the local level and who at the community level and the constituencies. Because they're also up for elections. See, this is an interesting thing we haven't talked about. These are harmonized elections, which means there's four different elections happening on Saturday for the first time. The presidential, parliamentary, the Senate, and local councils. So there's four different sets of offices being filled on the same day. And one of the minor signs of deterioration in the pillars of support for the Mugabe regime has been that a lot of the local candidates at parliamentary level and other levels are campaigning as ZANU-PF, but not saying they're a Mugabe guy. You know, their posters and so on don't, as they have in the past, say, you know, vote for me, I'm going to support Robert Mugabe. They are running their own campaigns and distancing themselves, at least, you know, implicitly, by not invoking the president's name in their campaigns. And so that's another sign of, you know, distancing. Not opposing him, but not embracing him. And so, you know, what those people do, and if somebody says to them, you know, you got to send the truck over and take the ballot boxes to the back room, you know, are they going to say no? I don't want to be part of this anymore. We can't afford it. Or, you know, I can survive and you can't. Those are the pressures. That's going to be made by 1,000 people on Saturday. 1,000 key people in the regime will have to decide whether to implement the plans. And I don't know how well developed those plans are. I don't know how, you know, there's a lot of speculation that key figures in the regime that might have been instrumental in this in the past just won't push the button, so to speak. They won't do it. Because they're not changed.
Yeah. I just wanted to also to add what you said, Tom, on what motivated Makoni. I think let's look at his background. I mean, Simba Makoni, you know, he was one of the youngest, I mean, ministers at Independence when he was deputy minister for agriculture, and then was then promoted to a full minister when he became minister of energy. But if we look back at his history, it's like Makoni has been surviving on Mugabe's support, and left alone on his own, he could not stand. That's something very interesting to note. In his rural area, there were some primary elections for the district. He lost it, Simba Makoni. Yes, he lost it. Again, when he was minister of energy, then Mugabe, I mean, then Zimbabwe was SADC. That's when he became the executive secretary for SADC. And the media, certain sections of the media, started to sort of profile him as, you know, somebody who is going to emerge as the future leader. He was one of the youngest, I mean, cabinet ministers, and being sent to head 11 countries at SADC at that time was like they were trying to build his profile so that when he comes back, he will be in charge. But there's got a lot of division within ZANU-PF as to really is Simba Makoni the one who was supposed to take over in ZANU-PF, because you have Sidney Sekeremai on the other side, because the game here was being played between the Zezulus, and they've got the Manikas. Zezulus are those from Mashonaland Central, and Manikas are those from Manikaland, and you've got also the Karangas from Mashingo. So there have been this tribal, I mean, issue, I mean, with regards to the ZANU-PF leadership. So the same Mugabe, okay, fine, you are from ESSU, and therefore we need somebody from the other tribes to take over. And the same with Joshua Nkomo, is from Matabele and is in Ndebele. At least he was a vice president, so he had this chance. Yet also Joyce Mujuru is vice president, is also the Zulu. So the Zulus and the Ndebeles have had their chance. So it's time for the Manikas. These were debates going on in ZANU-PF circles. But we are still to really get the reality of what's going on in ZANU-PF, because there seems to be a lot going on which is not being explained. Surely, if there are people in ZANU-PF who are backing Simba Makonye, why would they embarrass him to go and attend a rally and have only about less than 2,000 people? Why are these big wigs not coming up into the open to support him? Because if they're not coming up into the open, they're not instilling any confidence in those who would want to support him. They would think that, you know, it's a waste of time. He mentioned that within 10 days from the day he said he was going to stand for president, he said within 10 days he was going to have the big wigs in ZANU-PF, you know, coming up, and he'll be publishing them. But up to now, we've got only one person. So whether people are trying to be extra careful not to come into the open and embarrass Mugabe, whether they think they would achieve this by doing it privately and secretly, but when you're talking about elections, I think it's all about openness and, I mean, getting endorsements and things like that, which is not the case for Zimbabwe. But the background of Simba Makonye is not somebody who, when left alone in ZANU-PF circles, being given an opportunity to contest in his home area, he wouldn't even win an election. But he's somebody who's coming up as the leader. But it's a bit, I mean, confusing, but this is the reality. So maybe he's got the people like Mujuru behind him, but one would ask, honestly, would Mujuru, whose wife is most likely to take over when Mugabe dies, would want to cede, I mean, the powers to Simba Makonye at the expense of his wife, who is the vice president? So these are issues people are talking about. Is this a media spin all about, which was being said in the media, that there are people who are going to support him who are very influential in ZANU-PF politics? If they are there, where are they not coming out? These are some of the questions that are being raised, and it's a problem really from us, from a reporting point of view. That in fact, here is the situation, how do you put it across? You hear people talking about Simba, you talk to the people, some of the politicians, they say that that's a non-event. So what exactly are we talking about? So I think we have to wait really on Saturday and see the outcome of this election, because I think the media has also played its part here to an extent that, I mean, there has been quite a lot of excitement, but is this excitement going to translate into reality in removing Mugabe from power? So that's the thing that we have to wait for Saturday. It's a little bit confusing. Coming on the second round, issue of a runoff, I mean, they are now debating the law. They are saying that, okay, fine, despite the fact that there is a constitutional provision that whoever wins the SPF, 50% plus one vote. They are saying there is a provision in the Electoral Act that whoever gets the majority becomes the president. This is the debate that is going on right now, with only a few hours to go to election. So there is some confusion within the Electoral Act itself. It's talking about 50 plus one vote, then you read other provisions that are talking about whoever gets a simple majority becomes the leader. So that's a bit of a problem too. Government of National Unity. It's going to be a bit of a problem too. Okay. In the event that Mugabe let's say we remove Simba Makonye, Mugabe and Tsvangirai have got the highest numbers in terms of votes, and they cannot make it the 50% plus one vote. I mean, how would they come together to do it? When we talk to people, I think unity between ZANU-PF and the MDC right now is just a non-starter. But you have the Simba Makonye factor too. But how many numbers are they going to pull will be an issue to discuss. Because we may talk of people who have got big names, but we do not have the support base. So it's going to be tricky, the result of this election. So the MDC, I do not see, the Tsvangirai said, I do not see it having a government of national unity with ZANU-PF, because, I mean, these are parties we have agreed to disagree. And if you look at what happened, I mean, the beating of the opposition members, the jailing, the killings and everything. And there is so much pressure from the grassroots MDC that there is no way we can go to bed with the devil. So the leaders might want to do that, but it's up to people to decide again. So it's a bit of a problem, really, for Zimbabwe. But we hope that, I mean, when people go to the polls on Saturday, you know, there's not going to be some violence. And that also, too, that the government is not going to use two laws to interpret the result of the law and to see who is supposed to be in government. Because there are two pieces of legislation that are conflicting each other right now as we talk.
Yes?
I'm I'm curious about the role of exile groups funding some of the brands or outside influencing decisions made inside by either political party actors or society organizations. How are we to understand the role of groups, say, in South Africa on these elections or say, potential? A change situation where there might be potential to reinvest. Is there a lot of potential inertia from opposition groups or people who've left that are just to survive and they're not playing a role in the elections? I'm curious about the exile groups. It's such a large percentage of population out of the country, but not far away. It seems that there are some potential dynamics worth understanding.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I think there's a question in the back. And, sir? I'll take a fourth one too, but let me turn it over to you first.
My name is Tabela. I'm from Ethiopia, and it's really very important to remind ourselves of it. But violence seems to be the defining characteristics of elections in the eastern part of the eastern side of Africa. Remember, we had an election, national election. In the year 2005, which very often ended in mass violation. And again, we had 2 months ago, we had an election in Kenya, and we don't know what happened there also. In view of all this, what do you think the scenario would look like on the election day or immediately after the election, given what the activities in the environment?
Okay. There's a young woman in the back.
Yes. My name is Sarah, I'm an attorney. Other than his sheer megalomania, one of the reasons often demands that Mugabe won't step down is the fierce charges of the ICC. Does anybody actually think that that is realistic, considering most of his crimes are economically based and tying into things such as election violence might be a little bit tenuous? So does anyone actually think that that is something that he is actually in his mindset of keeping him in office as well?
Okay, I'll just take one last one.
Lawrence Friedman from Executive Intelligence Review. I just have two questions. One is, I think it was probably an unwritten rule or a spirit that in this Amendment 18 that Becky worked out that possibly Mugabe would be elected if he is elected, and that the Parliament would make a decision if he would step down. I didn't know how public that is, or if that's something that more discussion. The second thing is that people here have said that Mugabe will not accept the election of NDC, which I don't think is possible, but will people here, Freedom House and USIP and other institutions, will you accept that Mugabe is elected? Or will you say that if Mugabe is elected, it's a fact though, that means it was voted for it, and you won't accept it, being here in Washington? But don't forget, he called for elections in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and Hamas won. And our two great leaders, Cheney and Bush, didn't accept it, and now we're killing children in the Gaza Strip for sanctions. So, is it the case that Mugabe could not possibly win, and therefore, if he does win, without knowing anything else, that means that he's voted for it, and that means he moves against that regime if we have other regimes? So, those are the two questions.
Can I answer his question about Zimbabweans in the diaspora? I mean, you know, Zimbabweans really, they in the diaspora, I mean, they do send quite a lot of money back home just to take care of their families. But to really use that money for democracy, pro-democracy activities and things like that, I haven't really come across that. It's rather unfortunate. You find that there are many people in the diaspora who are actually making a survival of the crisis that is in Zimbabwe. And they would even want, some of them, that the crisis continues, because it would justify wherever they are and their existence. Then there are other people, you know, who are, you know, I mean, who are into opposition politics, helping the political parties, I mean, back home. Like, I mean, the MDC, it has got its members. Simba Makoni, you know, is getting some support from people in the diaspora, in London, America, UK, to help fund the activities of the party back home. And also, but as I mentioned that, I mean, there are people who have come, who have gone to the diaspora for different reasons. There are people who have left the country, some of them being members of the ZANU-PF, but who have sought asylum on the basis that they claimed that they were being persecuted, and they got it. And they would want the situation to remain as it is, because they'll be benefiting. Then there are other people who came here, or who are in the diaspora because they are professionals, who are so passionate, who want to go back and make a contribution. They continue to do that. But you ask yourself, like in Washington, in the Washington metropolitan area, I mean, we ask ourselves, I mean, do we have any Zimbabwean groups that, I mean, some kind of organizations that group together to discuss about these things? When you talk about playing soccer, yeah, they do. But really to sit down and say, come, let's sit down and do something back home, you rarely, I mean, hear people. Even if people, you make a phone call to somebody, ah, guys, let's have a conference call and talk about what's going back home. What is it exactly that you're talking about? Maybe it could not be even politics, but just to say, okay, guys, let's look at the crisis. How do we contribute? Yeah, then Ms. Red is, oh, he's a member of the opposition. He's trying to sort of bring us into their fold and things like that. So there is a lot of division, especially like in Washington area here, that Zimbabweans, they might meet in the city and say, hi, how are you, and things like that. But after that, that's it. There is no interaction, there is no coming together as groups to really help back home because of the different backgrounds that they do have. On the issue of violence, I mean, Zimbabwe is known for having violence before elections. On the polling day, there is no violence. And after the results have been announced, there have never been some violence. But maybe we are going to have some violence because people think that Mugabe is making all these statements that he's not going to accept members of the opposition taking over. And also, we are also having these statements coming from the military and the police, threatening people and things like that. People have said, okay, fine. If they are going to deny us our rights, why should we remain quiet? So chances of violence after election is quite high this time. Because, I mean, over the years, violence has been there before election, during the period to the election. On polling day, to be peaceful. And that sort of worries us as Zimbabweans, that when you talk about international observers, like the African Union only sent its people yesterday to observe the election. And SADC did send that like last week. So, I mean, elections, you know, we're talking about during the campaign period. But they just go there for a week, and after the elections, they endorse, oh, there was no violence. Everything was free and fair. That happened in 2005, that happened in 2002, that happened in 2000. So we've been hearing these reports from SADC and the African Union endorsing the elections that they are free and fair, apart from the SADC Parliamentary Forum, which came up with a very critical report on what happened in Zimbabwe. But this time, you know, they were not allowed to come and observe the elections by the government. So this is the situation that we are facing.
I don't know the answer to the question about whether the prospect of the ICC is influencing anybody's views in Zimbabwe, but the fact that the question is worth asking is part of the answer to Mr. Freeman's question. Both Simba Makoni more recently and Tsvangirai over a longer period of time have talked about truth and justice commissions and truth and reconciliation commissions and different ways to try to document and expose the various crimes against the Zimbabwean people by the Mugabe government. And, you know, whether that or some other judicial process is influencing, you know, the actions by Mugabe and his associates, I don't know. But the fact that it has to be asked is part of the answer, Mr. Freeman. Would we say that it's a free and fair, not a free and fair election automatically because Mugabe might be declared the winner? No. He has made it more difficult for us to know whether it would be an honest count by dozens of steps he's taken, even in the last few weeks. If Mugabe wanted there to be an honest count of the vote and was confident in some degree that the people of Zimbabwe might vote for him in those circumstances, he wouldn't have excluded independent observers. He wouldn't have suppressed the ability of opposition candidates to campaign in the publicly owned media. He wouldn't have fiddled with all the election boundaries and pushed the parliamentary constituencies out into the rural areas where he thought his support was greater. I mean, every step that's been taken, even in the last few days, let alone over the last few years, says that he's not confident that he could win in a free and fair process. And the consequence of each of these measures to obscure the actual intention of the voters is that it makes it hard for us to know what the outcome will be. We'll see what happens over the weekend and whether even within the range of possibilities for an honest election process remain, if those are followed, and observers watch the ballots being counted and are free to report them, and they say Mugabe won in this and this and this polling station, and the results speak for themselves, we would absolutely recognize that. That's our first obligation. We're trying to describe it as accurately as we can. We don't have any sort of predisposition to want Mugabe to lose, except that his record speaks for himself. And I think that's the question the people of Zimbabwe are being asked to vote on.
I kind of picked up that tone a little bit, though.
I think it's a pro-Zimbabwe discussion. It's really about how the people of Zimbabwe can take back control of their own election process.
Any questions? I thought there was one in the back.
Yes,
sir. And then.
My name is Martin Kwan. I'm an atheist. I am from Cameroon. I don't really have a question, but I have a worry that can bring concerns, that can bring a lot of questions out. In most of undemocratic societies like in Africa and other parts of the world, my question is, there is no date for elections. Why no elections? Because most of the time we know the outcome of most of the elections. We definitely all know what is going to happen. The president or the regime in power, they are the players, they are the referees, they are the judges. So we all know what's going to happen. I would definitely know that out of 9 or 10 cases, the opposition will genuinely win. Because you can't manage somebody ruling a country for 25, 28, 30 years. You need to know the atrocities you have committed in that country. But in 9 or 10 countries, the opposition will genuinely win in a free and fair election. Allah, we cannot have this free and fair election. Because as Sheila mentioned somewhere, the president of the regime don't know where to go or where to hide their heads when they lose. But they must be held accountable for their acts, for their deeds. They are conscious of their acts. Not knowing where to go when they are beaten down, they must be judged, tried, and condemned. They have to take that the last straw they have. They have to make sure they hold on to that power and die there. That's the way I break my head on this. Mine included. Mine is subsequently changing the constitution to be president for life. Because of, I just tell
or maybe longer.
Because he doesn't know where to go. After this, he has changed it 3 times. It was 5 years, twice only. He switched to 7 years, twice only. It's coming to end. He's not changing it to be there for life. And he's been there for about 28 years. And he was prime minister for over 18 years as prime minister. So you see, the thing, the country was burning on this and he doesn't care. So, 2 things are going to happen here. I have a lot of friends in Zimbabwe. Don't be surprised. There will be violence, of course. It's going to be violence, don't doubt it. It's going to be. You may lose the friends. Life will go. We have brothers and sisters and parents there. You will definitely lose them. war or crime. Look a little bit back here. If Mr. Kofi Annan is dancing there and creeping and drinking and shaking hands, thousands of lives are buried and gone. You cannot bring those people back. My concern, my worry is, why can we not do something before this life are lost and we start jumping the international community are going in? This was the best time before this election for them to stand up and force these regimes and electoral committee and even make us to for them to know if they're dead, they're going to do this. If they're voting, they're going to die. And they start shouting and moving in, it's too late. So if it cannot be done before, sometimes we want to believe, leave them there, let them even go and die there. It's just killing our people. But don't be surprised in Zimbabwe, when the election will be rigged, thousands of people will die for the international community to join. So that's why I come out with there is some death of election in a democratic society. No freedom, no liberty. We just kill people. That's just my concern. It worries me a lot, you know. I don't even want to talk about it. I told some friends, we've called the other day, they will take him. That's the ultimate. If I'm losing my mother or my father or my brother or sister, okay, he's an individual. Leave him there. So that's just my concern and my worry about it. Trust me, the opposition will win, but they can't go nowhere. You will see them. You will steal, you will call it stealing, and they'll be violent, and people will die.
Okay, let me just take the woman over there and...
You talked about the economic situation in Zimbabwe, and I just had a question about education, the state of education there, and what are some of the promises that the presidential candidates are making to the people of Zimbabwe about their children's education?
Well, the teachers have been on strike recently because they because their salaries are diminishing in worth every day, and it's a sign of the dysfunction of the state-managed school system that they can't pay the teachers adequately to keep them in the classroom, and so they went on strike for 3 or so weeks recently. The MDC has placed a lot of attention on the rebuilding the school system and their campaign. Whether they have the degree to which they have a real plan to be able to do that, if they should come to govern, I don't. Time will tell. But it's certainly something that's frequently discussed in Zimbabwe.
I just wanted to respond to the gentleman when you talk about the international community, and there was also, somebody who raised the issue of the amendment number 18. Look at what Thabo Mbeki did. You know, he was involved in this mediation process. They tried to amend the constitution. Right now, the Zimbabwe constitution is silent on the term of the president. One would have thought that with the Thabo Mbeki, you know, with these guys, with the MDC pushing for a term, that should have been contained in that in the constitution. That once the president is elected, he has to serve for 2 terms or 3 terms. It has to be agreed. But I mean, the term of the president, as it is right now, it's open. It's only when he dies, then parliament has to vote and pick another president. So I still think that instead of really looking to the international community to come and help, I think it's high time for Africa to look seriously at itself and address issues that affected them as Africans. Because right now, we have got the Mugabe problem. There was the Kibaki issue recently when they were having problems with that. But why is it that they cannot sit down on their own and agree? Why is it that they do not respect their own laws that are in place? I think this is the problem that we are facing, that's why people are hoping for a new organization. That's why people are not really trusting Simba Maponi, because if you look at the ZANU-PF politics and him, you know, being supported by people from ZANU-PF, what changes is he going to bring about? If he's being supported by people like Solomon Mujuru, who has looted the economy, right? What policies is he going to bring that are going to
develop the country. They're the same people. It's not about removing Mugabe. I think it's about dealing with the institutions, reforming them, which is needed right now. But that's where we find a bit of a problem that, I mean, Simba Makoni has not really come clearly, because he's saying he is ZANU-PF, he's only there to get rid of Mugabe. So what is he going to do with the Mugabe institutions that are in place? The people that he wants them to support him are the very people who were involved in the massacres in Matabeleland. The soldiers who killed people in Matabeleland, these are the people he's saying they are supporting him. What type of people are these who are going to bring positive change to Zimbabwe? So, you know, that's why people are thinking that sometimes, you know what, the Simba Makoni project, you know, people have to be very careful with it. Although I've noted many developed countries seem to be, you know, buying the Makoni project. But, you know, it's going to be a big problem. Makoni is an extension of what's happening in ZANU-PF. And if he's going to get into power, there is nothing that he's going to do without dealing with the Dabengwas, without dealing with the Mujurus, without dealing with the Chiwengas, who have got literally everything at their disposal. I mean, they looted minerals in the Congo. They've got people like Shiga Dube, one of the richest people in the world. So these are people who are in ZANU-PF circles. So the opposition is saying, no, we need to get rid of this culture. But how are you going to get rid of this culture if you are bringing in somebody like Simba Makoni, who has got the backing of the same people who are in ZANU-PF, who have looted the economy? So it's a problem.
I think there was a hand in the back. No?
Well, that's probably a question better directed to government officials about what their plans are. But I think it's hard to imagine that if Mugabe is announced as the winner of the election, that the international community would take that at face value. I think given all the structural impediments to a decent campaign but it, you know, depends on what happens over the weekend, I think. I wouldn't necessarily presume to know what either what the weekend will bring or what the international response would be.
Sir, you have a question.
I'm Brad Dawson, also to follow my colleague from ISIS. What are the expectations of the African Union? They've just arrived this weekend, and they're probably the only credible outside organization. I'm getting a snicker, but we're credible on that one. What are the expectations of their observations?
Want to declare an interest? Do you want to declare an interest in the question? I mean, IFAS has been working with the African Union.
Yes, I will. We've been working directly with the Elections Assistance Unit, and we are one that will say the unit has not stood up at this point. They are observing as they have observed in the past without the greatest training, but they have been observing and are, I would say, the only credible organization that is in Zimbabwe and can be trusted to deliver a report. And as members of the international community that are interested in this, what are our expectations about the program that will happen there over the weekend of the afternoon?
Well, I think the African Union is seen differently than SADC is at this point. But I think, as you said, the proper election assistance unit is not fully established. I don't know how well this observer program is put together. I know it's come together late, smaller than I think was envisioned, less time on the ground than would have been preferred. But I think and I don't even know the names. I had heard that people thought that some of the individuals that were coming under the AU umbrella were people with reputations of integrity and would do an honest job. Their ability to really get a handle on the whole situation, I think, was the question, not so much their willingness to describe what they saw accurately. So I think it's an open question. I think the expectation is that the AU could play an important role if they're able to step up and use the position that the AU has to say something. But I think it'll depend on what they say.
Okay.
you know, how and whether that resonates with Zimbabweans and says, yes, that's about right, or whether people say, no, that's badly informed. So I think that's an open question, but I think a lot of people are hoping that the AU can step in where the PRSADC probably is not going to be able to do to provide a credible international voice.
Okay, are there any other questions for the panel? Okay, one, yes?
Carla Woodson, USIP. Back to the money question for 1 minute. Mr. Miller, you mentioned a little bit about where his support might be coming from, but what votes are coming to Makoni? Are they being taken from people who would theoretically have voted for Mugabe, people who would theoretically have voted for Tsvangirai, or people who might not have voted because they didn't see a worthwhile candidate? I mean, where is this vote coming from?
That's a good question. I wish I knew the answer to that. You know, there's been some efforts at polling and focus groups done in the last couple of months, including since Makoni announced his candidacy. I think the difficulties of doing surveys in Zimbabwe suggest that one should view that very tentatively and cautiously and not attach a great deal of weight to those findings. So I don't know. You find different speculations that this is a way for ZANU-PF votes to, you know, voters to go out and vote for somebody that's more palatable than Robert Mugabe. Others say people are, you know, that don't like Mugabe are tired of voting for Tsvangirai, so they find this will be another, you know, another anti-incumbent vote. So you hear it both ways. I don't know. I have some presumptions, but that's all they are.
Just to also, I mean, add on what Tom.
Let me introduce it.
Okay. Just add on what Tom just said. Obviously, there are some people in ZANU-PF who are not happy with what's happening in ZANU-PF and would vote for Makoni. And there are also people who are not happy with what's happening in the MDC. You know, the MDC is split already. There is the Mtambara faction, there is the Tsvangirai faction. And the Mtambara is said it's endorsing Makoni. And today they were actually in Blawayo where they were telling all their supporters that you have to go and vote for Makoni. But also, if you ask people on the ground too, there is some kind of, a different view altogether. There are people who are in the Mtambara camp who support Mtambara, but not buying the idea of having Makoni as their presidential candidate, because of the statement that he has made. Of course, the coming up of Tshepiso Tabengwa openly saying that, like in Matabeleland, you know, people might be excited, but people still raise their fears, because if we are talking about Matabeleland, that's where the MDC Mtambara has got the best. I mean, forget about Midlands, Harare, and other places. You know, if the Mtambara side are going to get voices in Matabeleland, Bulawayo and other parts of Matabeleland. So there is problem again within that area, because there are other people who are saying Simba Makoni is associating himself with ZANU-PF, and in Matabeleland, the more you associate yourself with ZANU-PF, then you're not going to make it politically. Even Tabengwa lost his seat to an MDC because people were opposed to ZANU-PF. It's not that they were voting in MDC that they were good. No, no, no. They were voting out ZANU-PF. So as long as Simba Makoni is associated with certain members of the Mtambara side, he might have problems from as a president, as a presidential candidate in Matabeleland, except that they may not even vote for him. They may vote for candidates, but not vote for him. These are some of the information that we are getting on the ground.
I think maybe by way of closing, I wanted to just run, it's about 2 minutes of different slides of some of the civic education, get out the vote stuff. And just to set it up, this again comes from several different organizations that have been active in the last many months, and especially in the last couple of weeks, trying to mobilize people to get out to vote. Connected to this is an answer to an earlier question about the diaspora and the Zimbabweans living particularly in South Africa. Part of our program has also been to work with Zimbabweans in South Africa to provide some voter education to them in the hopes and in the case they go home to vote. Those who were in Zimbabwe and registered during the registration process and can return to vote, there's some, I think, not great, but some efforts being made to help transportation to get them back into Zimbabwe. Very unclear how many will actually go back to vote. The potential for absentee voting, which might have been a possibility, has not really developed. postal voting is for government officials rather than for economic refugees. And so they'd have to go back. They have to be registered and they have to go back to vote. But we've been working with a number of groups in South Africa to inform Zimbabweans there about the elections, and in particular at four large sort of crossroads places in Johannesburg where lots of Zimbabweans either live or work. And so there's kind of on a regular rolling daily basis entertainment and information and celebrities from Zimbabwe living in South Africa coming by to mobilize people. And I saw one of those centers when I was there 2 weeks ago, and it's quite a lively venue and a lot going on there. So I just don't know that very many Zimbabweans will actually go back and vote on the weekend. So just run this and we can sort of conclude with this. And just give you a flavor of some of the materials that are being circulated these days. There's a couple of little TV or radio clips that you'll hear as well. That's a stencil being used to commit graffiti all over the country. Speaks for itself. From a women's group mobilizing people to think about their children. It's from the Christian Alliance, the evangelical church group that I mentioned. Only God is Watching is meant to respond to the anxiety that somehow the government or the police will be watching how people vote. See this, this says Know Your Correct Ward down there in the bottom left. But until last week, people had no real basis to know where their ward boundaries were. So hopefully that's getting circulated more widely now.
Make the right move. If you don't go to vote this time, then you cannot complain if things are bad. If you do not use your vote, then someone will use it without your permission. You want that? Check your name is there on the voter's roll. Make sure you know where to go on voting day, because they've changed the voting world. One citizen, one vote, one chance, one future. Join the queue to end all queues. Zimbabwe Democracy Now.
So it's just a sampling. There's a lot of variety in what's actually being produced and distributed. But there you have it. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.